I'm ready, baby.
Help! I Suck at Dating with Dean Ungler, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hello, hello. Thank you for joining me on episode 12 of Help, I Suck at Dating. I'm Dean Ungler, joined in studio by my two lovely producers, Mark and Easton.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for being here, guys. Thank you for listening. We have a great episode in store for everyone today. We're going to be speaking to a couple from Married at First Sight who just had their first baby. More on that later. We're also going to be answering some listener emails and just kind of, you know, chatting, closing the year out on a good note, recapping a few things as well, and just kind of going from there.
It's been quite a year for you, hasn't it?
It's been a year like none other for me.
Take us back 1 year ago today, December 18th, 2016. What was happening? Were you filming The Bachelorette? What was going on?
December 18th, I think my roommate and I were leaving for Europe. We traveled through Europe for a month around this time of year. Hadn't even considered going on The Bachelorette at this point in my life. Didn't even know about the show. Well, I mean, I knew about the show, but had never really considered being a serious contestant on it. So my roommate and I went to Eastern Europe, like Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, those types of countries for about a month for Christmas and New Year's, all that kind of stuff. I got back mid-January, living my normal life, recruiting away, you know, doing my best to make ends meet. And then come February is really when things kind of kicked into overdrive for me. And my friend is the one that put me up for nomination. I want to say like February 16th.
Was the same guy that you went to Europe with?
Nope, different guy. Different, okay. One of my best friends. And then fast forward a month from there. So I think February 14th, I had the initial conversation.
Did he ask your permission to nominate you?
I guess I've never really talked about this on the show, have I? So my application process for The Bachelorette, my best friend in the world, I swear by him. I love him to death. I would do anything for him. He calls me up one day. He lives in Colorado now. We moved out to LA together, but he moved back. Lives in Colorado. Calls me up and says, "Hey, Dean, I have this idea for you that I want you to follow through with no matter what you like, no matter how you feel about it. Like, I just want you to at least like exercise the option or the idea of it all." So I'm like, "Of course, man. Like, I trust you. You always have like these fun, interesting ideas. So I'll go through with it." Sure enough, he passes my information along to a friend of ours who knows a good friend of one of the executive producers of the show. And I guess if we really want to dive deep into it, maybe about a month prior, one of my other best friends who works in the industry, he worked for UTA for a while. He always wanted me to become a model. And I was always like, "No, I don't want a model. Like, that's the last thing that I want
to
do."
Why? That seems like such a, I don't want to say easy money, but it seems like if people take your picture and you can make a lot of money.
It's just I don't have the confidence. I don't have like the interest and vanity for that type of thing. Like, I don't like pandering for a camera, taking my shirt off and like doing all that. But he like set up this meeting with, it was like Wilhelmina or something like that. And I was like, "Fine, like, you set up a meeting with Wilhelmina. Like, I'm not going to bail on the meeting. Just out of respect for you. Like, I don't want to like tarnish your connections or anything like that." And in order to go to that meeting, I had to take like 10 or 15 pictures of myself shirtless and like in all these different outfits. And so I recruited another one of my good friends to like come to like a Nordstrom with me and like take like pictures of me like shirtless and like trying on like new suits and all that kind of stuff. Anyways, it seems like that's not part of the story, but the friend that took those pictures of me for the Wilhelmina shoot that they wanted ended up, I guess, getting sent to my friend who nominated me for Bachelorette, who he could then send those pictures to like the Bachelorette producer. Actually, the producer in studio, Amy, is the connection that we had, who has a good friend that works on the show. And then so from there, I had like a phone call with Amy, who again is a good friend with one of the executive producers. And then it just kind of snowballed. In the matter of 3 weeks, I went from not really being interested in being on the show, not really knowing anything about the show, to leaving for my first day of filming, which was like March 13th or something like that. So my year, as everyone knows it, basically began middle of March. It's been like a 9-month year for me. And yeah, it's been a whirlwind. I went on a TV show that I'd never expected to go on. Incredibly grateful for, had an amazing experience, met obviously a lot of amazing people, guys and girl, Rachel being the girl. And it's just kind of, it's been, I don't really know what to make of it yet. I haven't really had a chance to kind of settle down, digest everything and understand how it's affected me, if that makes any sense.
How often do you get recognized when you are at a restaurant or out in public? Does that happen a lot?
What's funny is, so I just walked into the studio here, went to go grab a cup of coffee, and I'm standing there while my coffee is brewing, and these two people are having a conversation. I'm like walking away, and one of the girls like looks at me and she goes, "Oh," and I go, "Hi," and she goes, "You know when you recognize someone that you think you know, but you don't know how you know them?" I get that a lot. Like, people are like, "I know I know you, but I don't know why or how I know
it's
you."
It's not as, "Oh my God, it's Dean from The Bachelor." They're like, "That face is really familiar to me."
Yeah, and it's definitely gone through waves. Like, during the peak of Bachelorette, during the peak of Bachelor in Paradise, it was very much, "Oh my God, it's Dean." Like, well, but that's just because I was on TV at the time. And now that things have kind of died down a little bit, yeah, like, people will still notice and recognize, you know, all that kind of stuff, which is fine. I don't mind at all. Actually, I was on a flight last night flying back from the East Coast, and like one of the male flight attendant comes up to me and he's like, "Hey, the two women in the front want to talk to you." And I was like, "Am I in trouble? Like, what did I do wrong?" And I'm in 20D or something like that. So like I stand up and walk all the way to the front of the airplane, and these two girls, like these two flight attendants, are up there and they're like, "Hey, are you Dean?" I was like, "Yeah." "What's up? Can I help you? Did I do something wrong?" And they're like, "Oh, we just like wanted to talk to you and like meet you." And I'm like, "You guys are flight attendants. You're working right now." They're like, "Can we get anything for you?" And I was like, "Well, I guess if I'm up here, I'll take a whiskey on the rocks." So like I sat up in the front of the airplane with this two stewardesses for like 20 minutes, just like talking about life. And
wow.
That stuff is like, it's stuff that never would have happened otherwise. Right. And it's a fun lifestyle, but I understand like the temporariness of it all. So I don't know. It's been a bit of a whirlwind. Like I'm not any different than I was a year ago by any stretch of the imagination. In the fact that like I still like I don't have a special talent. I didn't like do something of value to like add to society or anything like that. But people still like recognize me and are still like interested in getting to know me and getting to know my life a little bit more, which I just find so interesting in and of itself. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, let's fast forward from there. So I think I had like a 3-week break between Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise where things were very normal because the show hadn't aired for me at that point. I still hadn't gone back to my job just because I knew I was going to leave in, you know, a couple weeks to go on Bachelor in Paradise. So it was basically status quo at that point. And then that's kind of when things started to get interesting. I think the show aired, I want to say like May, like late May or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, people were starting to like notice you and take pictures
of
you.
So you got more kind of feedback and response from that appearance than you did your initial Bachelorette appearance?
No. Well, I'm just saying the show didn't air until, Bachelorette didn't air until Paradise was filming.
Oh, right.
And so I didn't really fully get to experience that while it was airing. But yeah, like, I mean, everything's changed from my dating life to my professional life to just like my friendships and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of almost like instilled a bit of like cynicism in the way that I go about relationships now, where it's like, what are you trying to get out of this relationship? Which I've noticed recently, and I just hate myself for doing it. Like I'll meet someone who is like genuinely interesting and interested in me and beautiful and intellectual and like wants to sit down and have a conversation. And I'm sitting there like thinking in the back of my mind, it's like, why are you doing this? Like, what do you plan on getting out of this? When normally I never would have had that thought in the first place. And I don't like that. I don't know how I can go about fixing that. I think that there is like a weird social utility involved with being attached to someone off the show like this, for better or for worse, whether they're doing it for themselves or for whatever reason. And even if they're not doing it, like I still feel like sometimes people are doing that, you know?
Is that why so many Bachelor people date other Bachelor people? Is it because only they know what it's like in the bubble and you date somebody else outside the bubble, there's a distrust there?
Yeah, but even in Bachelor Nation relationships, I think it's so apparent that people will be in relationships to increase their social footprint.
Yeah.
And that's one of the most frustrating things in the world. I myself, I'm not going to name any names, of course, but I've had conversations with people from Bachelor Nation, both female and male, saying how if you're in a relationship with someone with X amount of followers, how like your social footprint becomes so much bigger. And it's like once I start hearing those conversations, I'm like, what? Why? Like, I understand the value in it from like a fiscal perspective, but
it's your life, though.
It's your life, like, exactly. And that's the one thing that I kind of am proud of myself, because despite kind of everything that's happened and how it's unfolded and the negativity that was associated with me throughout Bachelor in Paradise, the positivity through Bachelorette, and now, you know, the 800,000 Instagram followers that I have for literally doing nothing, just for being myself, I still don't have any interest in being in a relationship with someone solely for the fact of getting more Instagram followers or like being in news articles and that
right.
type of
You'll
stuff.
Right, you'll show up in, if you date the right person, you're in People Magazine, you're in Us Weekly, and then who knows?
Right.
It increases your awareness.
Well, and what's interesting too is I was in a relationship, again, I'm not going to name any names, but it was like to the point where this girl was purposefully trying to publicize the relationship so things would be like written about us and her, and like she could just continue to build her persona and her brand, if you want to call it that. And it just seems it's like the disingenuousness of those types of things become so much more apparent to you, or maybe you're just fabricating things and making things up in your own head, which I kind of get down on myself for doing sometimes, if that makes sense.
Well, I can tell. I haven't known you that long, but I can tell when you say you haven't changed much in the past year. I do believe that, because you do seem like a very down-to-earth, normal guy.
Thanks.
You don't seem like you're all full of yourself now. But But it's also, that's why I find this interesting talking to you in this podcast, is it's interesting watching this normal guy deal with all this, all the elements that you have to deal with now from being on that show or shows.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of people let it get to their heads, I think. And I think that every time I begin to let it go to my head, because there have been instances when we were at the iHeartRadio Music Festival in Las Vegas, I was like walking around backstage and like I'm a little drunk. I'm like walking up on stage, like no one's stopping me from doing whatever I want. I'm like, I'm the king of the f-ing world right now. I can do it. Sorry for the bleeps. I'm like, I can do whatever I want. And then like I look back on the next day and I'm like, no, you can't. You're just some freaking moron 26-year-old that it just has confidence issues sometimes, you know? So it's like I can understand how people let this environment or let this kind of persona that becomes attached to you, like inflate their ego and instill like a false sense of bravado within them. And you see it happen. I see some people that, you know, I've been on the show with in past seasons or even seasons before that, but I'm friends with now, that you like let it get to their heads, if I could talk. Wow. And I really, really hope that never happens to me. Like I definitely do my best to remain grounded. And I think what's very important with that is staying and maintaining my friendships that I had before going on the show. And so that's kind of what I focused on. I did kind of let myself get consumed by the Bachelor bubble, where I was like hanging out with Bachelor people, you know, 5 days a week for a couple of weeks. And while they're great, like a lot of them are very, very great people and fun to hang out with. I think that the most important things are the realest things, you know? And so those real friendships that when you weren't doing well for yourself and when you were struggling to pay rent at the end of the month, the friends that were still there for you and will always be there for you. So it's been a very evolutionary year for me, now that we're getting back to that point. But I still feel like I'm the same person. I've learned a lot, especially through this podcast. I've learned an incredible amount through this podcast. The way that I communicate with people, both guys and girls, friendships, romantic relationships, professionally, all that kind of stuff. Even my former boss, all that. And I've experienced the benefits of being a better communicator, going on dates, and being much more able and willing to, I guess, share what they can expect and what I expect in a relationship and what it would be like to date someone like me who has a podcast titled Help, I Suck at Dating. That's a difficult one to get through sometimes. I could be on like a fourth date and they're like, so what do you do? I'm like, well, Mondays I go into a studio for about 2 hours and I host a podcast. Oh, what's the name of your podcast? Oh, what else do you want to talk about? it's tough. There's definitely a point. Especially with this, I mean, I love this. You guys are both, Easton and Mark, you guys are fantastic. Thank you. Amy, the producer, you guys are all amazing. But when your name is tied to a self-deprecating podcast called Help, I Suck at Dating, it gets you down a little bit.
Well, we're hoping that it's someday it'll be Help, I Suck at Relationships, and then it'll be Help, I Suck at Marriage. That's our goal for you, is to have the progression.
I understand I hope that we all think that it's a sarcastic title.
I think that's how
I think it is.
Yes. Okay. So no regrets in 2017. Obviously, some of the maybe things on Paradise you might have done differently, but as far as going on The Bachelor and Bachelor in Paradise, no regrets as far as that goes.
No regrets. I am very fortunate to live the lifestyle that I live now. I am very comfortable with financially where I am, which is weird because before I was always concerned and I was always like, if I had more money, I would just be so much happier than I am right now. And I do have more money now for whatever reason, for Instagram followers, whatever it is.
But you do. So
it is. Yeah.
But you found the happiness you were looking for there isn't there.
No. And like looking back to the trip that I took back in December, January, I was like super anxious all the time. I was like, why the hell am I so anxious? And I think it was because like I was uncertain where I was going to be moving forward financially, like professionally, whatever it is. And so now I don't necessarily have to worry about that quite as much, which is great, but I still feel a bit unfulfilled in avenues of life that I'm still trying to figure out, I guess, if that makes sense.
What about 2018? Moving forward, what do you envision? What are your goals? What are you hoping for?
2018, I've been mulling over some ideas. I am going to go back to my job, I think, at some point. I've been kind of considering it, at least on a part-time basis. I want to be in the office at least a few times a week, just because I don't want to lose a skill set.
So that's an open invitation. You can just go back whenever you want.
Yeah, my boss is incredible.
That's nice.
Yeah, he's like, if you ever want to come back, you're more than welcome to come back. I have to have the conversation with him. I want to come back on a limited basis, maybe like 20 hours a week, just to feel like I'm part of something worth getting a degree for. You know, like, this is obviously amazing, but I got a business degree from the University of Colorado, and I feel like I'm kind of not necessarily using that to its fullest extent, and I haven't necessarily pinpointed exactly where I want to go in life. So it's like, if I can continue to build on a skill set that I already have, I might as well continue to do that. I really want to take like a coding boot camp. I feel like you've probably done one of those before, right?
I look like a guy that has taken a coding boot camp, but I have not actually.
No?
I'm not versed in C++ or what's the other one, Cobra or anything.
See, but you know the lingo.
I know the lingo. Yeah. I can hang.
Yes. And so as a recruiter, I got used to recruiting a lot of like tech positions, and I was always like, I feel like I could do that. I used to program video games back when I was like little, just for fun, like very, very like novice type programming and all that kind of stuff. But I did it, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I've kind of gotten away from that a little bit. So it's like an idea that I've thought to be worth exploring a little bit. We'll see. Hopefully that kind of comes to fruition in 2018, but we'll see.
I think you're playing this smart, and that's a very practical way of viewing the future, mm-hmm. is that you have these things to fall back on, and you want things to fall back on.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people in this world, in reality television, just think it's their ticket to fame and fortune, and they can ride this wave for the rest of their life, and I don't know that that's happened for really anybody.
Right, and that's the last thing that I want, is to be a serial reality TV personality.
Right.
As great as the experience has been, there is definitely a roof to it, and I think that we're all pretty close to the roof after even going on the first show. I think anything more than 4 or 5 shows is just too much, especially if they're dating shows. If you're going on like a 5th or a 6th dating show, it's like you just got to give it up, chuck that up as a loss, you know?
Yeah.
But the friendships that I formed and the relationships that I've had, I can not be grateful enough for everything. Like, again, I don't think I would have met you guys had I not gone on the show. So it's all been a great experience, but I don't want to keep Jamie waiting on hold for too long.
Well, we're waiting for Doug, actually. Jamie's on, but we're waiting for her husband, Doug, to call in. So why don't you tell us about HelloFresh, and then we'll see if we have Doug.
HelloFresh. Boy, oh boy, this is a crazy time of year.
Who wants to go to the grocery store?
Who wants to go to the grocery store? Who wants to have to worry about the grocery list and picking out the right ingredients for the meal you want to cook? Your loved one, your kids, maybe your parents when you go home for the holidays. One great way of curbing that issue is just going through HelloFresh. So what they do is they'll send you all the ingredients you need for one of the most delicious meals you'll ever be able to make for yourself. But that's not just part of the HelloFresh experience. While the food is delicious and while you will fully and thoroughly enjoy eating it, one of the best parts about it is that you'll thoroughly and fully enjoy the preparation process, the cooking process, if you want to do it with a significant other, if you want to do it with your parents, with your kids, whatever it is. They're creative, they're delicious, they're nutritionally balanced. They're perfectly portioned and sent directly to your door. One of my issues with eating is I just eat and eat and eat and eat.
As you've said, any pizza can be a personal pizza if you try hard enough.
Deanie Babies has said that before. But what's great about HelloFresh is they will assign the perfect amount for you. So you don't overeat, you don't undereat, you're perfectly full, and you know just exactly when to stop. So if you go to HelloFresh.com and use my promo code Dean, that's DEAN, you'll get $30 off your very first week. And honestly, it's not very expensive at all. It's definitely worth it if you think about the return on investment. You're going to be eating healthier. You're going to be feeling better about yourself. You probably have these New Year's resolutions that you want to follow through on. And one of those things, if I know my friends, if they're anything like you, it's going to be to eat healthier, to get into better shape. And one of those best ways is to eat healthy going through HelloFresh.
HelloFresh could help with a ton of resolutions. I want to be a better cook. I want to cook for my family more, not eat out so often because we're spending so much money eating out all the time. Getting in shape, being less wasteful. It's all so many resolutions.
All those things. Earlier this year, I went through like an intermittent fasting phase where I just wouldn't eat for extended periods of time. I'm doing that again. I'm trying to go 3 days without eating right now.
Why?
So after I'm done with these 3 days, I'm going to dig in and cook some HelloFresh.
What day are we in right now?
This is day one.
Okay.
So last night was like my last final meal. I'm like, all right.
So you can't fast completely. So what are you eating?
I just drink coffee and water.
For 3 days straight?
Not even anything. My brother's done it for like 7 days. My roommate will do it for 5 days. But you guys, we're getting away from the point. We're talking about HelloFresh over here.
Well, let's wrap
and
up,
how amazing it is. So if you go to HelloFresh.com and use promo code Dean, again, you'll save $30 on your very first week. You'll be able to create some delicious meals like meatloaf a la mom with roasted root vegetables and thyme gravy, maybe some pan-seared scallops with heirloom tomatoes, mashed potatoes, and Meyer lemon, all of which are great options. I'm hungry just thinking about it. This fasting idea might be a bad thing for me. But HelloFresh.com, promo code Dean. You won't regret it. You'll love it. You'll look great. You'll feel great. 2018, here we come.
We're still waiting on Doug. So what is the benefit of this?
Yes. Yeah, so intermittent fasting, there's a lot of research that's been done on it lately. And if you look back to times when we didn't necessarily have like 3 meal a day structures, or like when we were like hunting for our food, scavengers, whatever it is, we would like hunt down a tiger and eat it and feast on it for like 4 days. And then you would not have a meal for another 4 or 5 days. So our bodies for so long have adapted to this way of living where we don't have, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's you eat heartily, you fill yourself up, and then you basically live off the fat stores in your body until you're able to eat again. And when you intermittent fast and you eat, typically what people do is eat between the hours of like 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. every single day, just like that 6-hour window. But then it allows your body to kind of like use the fat in your body as energy, which makes it burn it faster. Because that's kind of how we technically evolved. And yet here we are eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner for whatever reason, just because of modern farming and being able to like preserve food longer, all that kind of stuff. So I'm obviously not an expert on it. It's just kind of a lot of research has been put into it lately. It's definitely worth something. It's definitely worth Googling if
Is
you guys have time.
Is this a weight loss thing or a general health thing?
Well, it's a little bit of both.
Muscle building thing?
I've definitely put on a little bit of weight that I'm trying to lose, but it also is a general health thing. I think that, we have been kind of conditioned to think that we need 3 meals a day. But again, in reality, our bodies operate more efficiently when we're not eating as often every day.
Wow. And when this 3 days is out, what will you go nuts on?
HelloFresh.
Understood. Yes, you're going to go nuts on the pan-seared scallops. But other than that, like, is there a craving like In-N-Out or pizza or something, or do you try to keep it healthy?
So that's the thing too. I have a very, very unhealthy diet. I think if you follow me on any of my social media outlets, you constantly see me eating hot Cheetos, pizza, ice cream. And I'm very fortunate to have, I think, good genetics and a good metabolism.
Well, 26, when you're 40, it's going to be different.
See, and part of me almost thinks, I'm like, all right, like I'm 26, I can get away with it for now. I might as well just do it. But at the same time, like I keep seeing pictures of myself on Instagram. And I'm like, damn, you are getting so fat. And like I look back, I was looking at a picture of myself from like week one of Bachelorette back in like March. And I was like, wow, you look so much like slimmer back then. You like actually have abs. Your neck doesn't look like it has, you don't have like five necks. You only have one neck sort of thing, or chins or whatever it is. And so I'm just trying to, you know, get better, I guess, with all that.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's like Becca Tilly is another one who eats garbage all day, every
and
day, and looks amazing. Yeah. I just, at some point, that's got to change, I would think.
I thought with her that was like an act, you know, but like every time I've seen her, she has come in with like a big old Dr. Pepper and you're rolling deep in the McDonald's.
Absolutely, every single time.
Yeah.
Well, shall we talk to Jamie? And if Doug calls, he calls? Yeah. All right, so Jamie was on Married at First Sight on A&E, and she met Doug at the altar.
Okay.
And now they have a baby together.
Hi, Jamie, it's Dean. How are you?
Hey, Dean, how are you? I'm well.
Good. Thanks for calling in. I have both Mark and Easton in studio with us.
Awesome. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Jamie, I understand we're waiting for Doug to call in too, right?
Yeah, although, you know, I just texted him. He's working, so he may be, he does demos, and so he may be on a call tied up.
Classic Doug. Classic Doug.
Yeah, actually.
okay, well, so first
of all. So well already.
Oh, yeah, well, come on. Who doesn't? Were you on The Bachelor with Ben Flajnik?
Ben Flajnik. Yeah.
Flajnik. So you were?
Yep. Yes, I was.
Okay, that's amazing. I had no idea. We'll get into that a little bit later. I guess I do want to congratulate you on your newborn baby.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
That's amazing. Yeah. So for those of the listeners that aren't aware, Jamie is, I guess, was a contestant on Ben's season The Bachelor. And most importantly in her life, as far as I understand it, she was also on Married at First Sight with her now husband, Doug, who we hope to call in if the demo is able to kind of, you know, wrap up soon. But Jamie, do you mind telling us a little bit more about the show Married at First Sight for those of us that are unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, so basically what happened was I was on The Bachelor, and I was very, very young. I mean, I think I was 23 years old, and I was very naive because I had never even watched The Bachelor, and I was, like, to be honest, I was just a girl from, like, I had custody of my siblings, so I like, bought a trailer in a trailer park to, like, help take care of them. I was a freshman in college when I got custody of them, so I had, like, no money. We never really watched, I mean, of course, I've heard of The Bachelor, but I never really watched it. So long story short, you know, the ad comes on, do you want to date the next Bachelor or Bachelorette? You know, you know that ad, you must know it. And so, you know, my friend was like, oh, you should apply. I was like, oh, I will. And so when they called me, I was like, what me? Like the girl from the trailer park, what? And I didn't even feel like I belonged there. So really I was more like a fly on the wall. And long story short, like, oh, there's my husband. Is that my husband?
Sorry.
Hey, Doug.
Hello.
We were just going through Jamie's story about kind of the whole Married at First Sight show.
Oh, yeah, well, I was telling them about Bachelor. I don't even know if you know, like, how I ended up on Bachelor. But long story short, I ended up, you know, sending in, like, my picture and, like, the briefest information. And they ended up, I don't know, for some reason they were, like, intrigued by the fact that I was a nurse, I guess. I don't know. I was very young, though. So they ended up, you know, I ended up making it on this show called The Bachelor. And felt like I did not belong there whatsoever because these girls are, like, from mansions with beautiful homes and, you know, perfect skin and wonderful clothes, and I was like,
I know the feeling.
And about halfway through, you know, you're supposed to be, I mean, you know how it is on The Bachelor, you're supposed to, I hadn't even kissed the guy. I had barely said two words to him, so I thought it was a good idea to try to be sexy. And I apparently there was some, like, countdown of the worst kisses in The Bachelor history, and I made number one.
No, wait, really?
Anything. Yeah.
So
yeah,
proud of you.
Someone tweeted at us and told us, "Oh, you were the number one worst kisser in Bachelor history." My husband was like, "Really?" And, like, gave me a high five.
Well,
so
I'm
very memorable.
I'm sure that's improved since then. I'm sure Duck can attest that it's definitely gotten a lot better.
I'd like to say that I saved all the best kisses for my husband. I mean, there's something about kissing someone that you're not passionate, like you have no feeling for. It's not going to be very good. But when you love someone, it's a little different.
That's amazing. Okay, so then tell us a little bit more about Married at First Sight, because as far as I understand it, you guys fill out like a million question long questionnaire about yourselves, and then there's a panel of experts that kind of match you guys together, and then you meet on the altar for the very first time. That's when you see each other, and you're basically saying, "I do," 5 minutes later.
I mean, you said it better than we could. That's pretty much it, except at this point in my life, you know, I had done The Bachelor. I had this horrendous kiss. Like, trying to date was like... It was just miserable for me, really, because I come with a lot of baggage, you know, like my mom has dependency issues. I don't know who my dad is. I have custody of my siblings. Like, it's not like, "Oh, where'd you go to college?" You know, like, it's never like just an easy, nice to meet you kind of conversation. So when they cold called people, actually, and they said, "Are you having trouble dating in New York?" And, you know, of course, like, if you're not married, and then you're probably struggling in New York dating. And long story short, they said we have four experts, and they're, you know, they're very, very professional, and they're, you know, they're trying to help change the way dating is in America, and we'd love to help you out. And that's kind of how it started. And then at the very, very end, they say, "Oh, newsflash, this is actually for marriage, and, you know, now that you trust these experts, will you trust them to pick out your spouse, and you'll marry him before ever meeting him, knowing his name, you'll know nothing about him." And long story short, I guess we both, like, you know, dove right in, and here we are, married 3.5 years later with a baby.
I love it. So I have a question for both of you then. Feel free to answer independently. What were both of your first thoughts when you walked to the altar when you saw the other person?
Yeah, I think that it's, like, not a surprise for anyone who's ever seen Married at First Sight. I was very, I took it very seriously because I really genuinely wanted to be married, and I really wanted a family. And I really trusted these experts. I mean, they're very genuine people, you know? So, like, one of the doctors, she came to my apartment and, you know, we met and talked about, I mean, she literally snooped around my house. She's a sociologist. And, we just talked about, like, what I was interested in. And I was just very honest about, you know, about a lot of things that, you know, like, that I would become, like, he'd be marrying into a family where my mom has, you know, drug issues, honestly. And then that's, like, not something that's easy to, you know, it's not easy to join into. So in any case, the experts say, "Oh, we found the perfect match for you." And I'm like, "Really?" And then they say, "You know, you're going to love him. He's the best." And so I have, like, these really high expectations that, like, you know, Brad Pitt's at the end of the aisle, and it's going to be amazing. And the door is open, and there's my husband. He's, like, pale as a ghost, pasty white, like, sweating profusely, smiling, like, this big grin. And I'm like, "Oh, no, this is not Brad Pitt." And I just, I said I do, but then I, like, had a panic attack and was like, this is just, it wasn't exactly what I had anticipated. Yeah. And, you know, and quite honestly, I think I was a bit shallow because there was no chemistry there. So I was like, "Oh my gosh, like, it's never going to work out. Like, I'm not even attracted to him." And I think that's, like, lesson learned, because you should never judge a book by its cover, really. Yeah. My husband's very attractive. And I think that first time meeting someone, I mean, I think this is, like, a lot of us, you know, you meet someone in a bar or, you know, wherever you meet, and you're not, immediately attracted to their physical appearance, and you don't even give them a chance. And maybe that's why there are so many people struggling.
And that's my daughter in the background.
Is that Henley Grace over there?
This is my little baby girl. I'll say hi.
She misses her dad.
So Doug, we're glad to have you back on. So can you tell us a little bit more about your first experience when you saw Jamie walking into the altar for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, it was always kind of a weird sort of way to explain what this show is. And when it was initially pitched, it was a love experiment. And then as I got to know, and I think I might be just a weird person in general, or at least I know I am, but I felt completely comforted after meeting the experts, and it was going to be a chance for me to say who I was and what I always imagined as a wife, and you know, here's who I am, and you can come meet my parents and interview, and based on all that information, they were going to match me up with someone that I probably would have picked physically and what my deal breakers were. And by the time that Jamie had walked through the door, it was almost like this is exactly what I had in mind. And I don't know. It was too weird of a scenario for me to even pass up, because it just is like, you know, there's some reason why I'm here. There's some reason why I randomly answered a voicemail saying, hey, we're from this show. We're doing a love experiment in the tri-state area. Are you interested? And it was just, I don't know. I just, for whatever reason, I felt like I should be there.
Gotcha.
Henley.
So it's safe to say you guys kind of had different experiences initially.
100%.
Well, so we pulled up the video right now. I'm watching the ceremony, and it's funny because you can definitely see in both of your faces that, you know, you're both excited, but you're both a little bit unsure. And I think that's kind of a natural reaction when you have a panel of judges pick out your, you know, the person that you're supposed to be forever spending the rest of your life with.
Yeah, Jamie saw a monster, and I saw a beautiful bride walking down the aisle.
Doug, I gotta say, you look great in that suit, though.
Thank you.
And Jamie, you look, of course, beautiful in the wedding dress. So tell us a little bit more about your guys' story then. So after that first or the initial greeting or meeting each other on the altar, which is still so crazy to me, what kind of, trials have you guys experienced together that you didn't necessarily expect to or that you weren't really prepared for?
You know, I think that by the time that, and I remember too, behind the scenes, it was, you know, Jamie was crying, and I always felt like I was a pretty good at reading people. And, you know, I understood the situation, and I was actually happy that she was crying because she was overwhelmed, and I knew she wasn't just going to put on a show, which was kind of the first, it was kind of the first sort of comfort event that happened. And then it was that night where we both were laying in the same hotel room in the same bed, and I had to put up a pillow between us because I didn't want Jamie to touch me that first night because I'm a gentleman. And we spent all night just kind of talking, and then on the way to our honeymoon, which was going to be in St. Thomas, we kind of connected on the plane ride there and got a little bit more touchy-feely, and I don't know, kind of boundaries and barriers started to kind of break away. And from there, it was like everything that we did, it was like, did you tell the experts that? Did you tell the experts? It was almost like everything was just sort of like clicking. And you know, we were fortunate to be the first season where it was like, you know what, we don't know how this is going to go. So let's just do everything. And Jamie just promised me that you'll be the same person on camera as off camera. And I don't have any reality TV experience at all. And so it was kind of like, let's just be normal and we'll see what happens and see where it goes. And I think immediately we both felt something that was keeping us together.
That's amazing. So Jamie, I understand you guys have some things coming down the pipeline, right? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, where our show is airing, it's premiering tomorrow at 8 on Lifetime. So every Tuesday, well, there after tomorrow, it premieres at 8, and then next Tuesday it'll be at 10. But we're really excited to share our, you know, our birth story with everyone and kind of the journey that we've been on to get to this point. Not even just for for Married at First Sight fans, it's kind of, it's huge because they watched us meet at the altar and fall in love very slowly and sometimes awkwardly and very painfully because it wasn't love at first sight, you know, it was more
very awkwardly.
But for new viewers, it's really more about like, you know, to me, it's like very important to share this because with our first pregnancy, you know, I lost our son Jonathan at 17 weeks and I work in labor and delivery, so it shouldn't have been so surprising to me to hear that one in four women go through, you know, some sort of loss, whether it be in the first trimester, the second trimester, or even the third trimester. And, you know, it's very devastating. And I felt like very, like, in like, just such a dark black hole, really. Like, I just felt like I could never come out of this depression because I, you know, we had planned we had planned on having him. And so, so for us, you know, we are very open and honest and very raw and real about the emotions that happen after a loss and then having a baby. And I really hope that it gives hope for women who are going through this right now, this trying to have a baby, whether it be infertility or just, you know, having just suffered a loss. I remember when I went through it, it was really helpful for me to hear from other women who were, you know, had gone through something similar and then they had a baby. But I wanted to share and be open about that. And now, as you can see, my daughter, they have minds of their own. Yes, we do.
Which is great. And it's always good to have kind of that happy ending at the end of all of it.
Yeah, I really hope it does inspire other women to know that they really can't. I mean, it's such a dark hole when you go through it, but there is hope at the end of the tunnel, and, you know, it's hard to see that in the midst of it, but, you know.
And also, too, if I could add to that, it's also a look at watching two new parents that are really have no experience being parents, and it was kind of just going through what everybody else goes through and not having any filters, and it was important for us to stay honest and talk about how, you know, how it is getting or just becoming a good parent, how to hold a baby, how to change a baby, how to manage a sex life, and how to get back into intimacy, and how to work out a schedule. And, you know, for even the beginning time, it was I can't remember any place or show or anything that really takes a look at first-time parents and allows cameras to be in the delivery room and then watch you for the next couple months and kind of just go through what everybody goes through. And, you know, it's kind of an unfiltered look at our life. And I think that we bring up really valid, you know, discussions and, you know, things that people go through all the time. And I think it should hit home for a lot of people.
Yeah, which is absolutely right. I think that, especially to do it so publicly, I feel like, too, coming out of the show, I'm sure a lot of people were interested kind of in your guys' relationship, and then to deal with something so traumatic as that, it really opens a lot of people's eyes to how real that type of stuff is. And Jamie, I think you said that one in four mothers or prospective mothers deals with that, and I honestly had no idea that number was even that high. So
yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, when you're able to relate to a quarter of half of the world, I mean, that's amazing. So I guess to kind of shift topics from that, I do have one question for you guys, for our listeners more specifically, because you guys were such a unique situation where you didn't know each other, but you were planned to be compatible. What was kind of, what do you think was the main driving factor in your guys' successful relationship that you can maybe pass on to the listeners that are struggling with, I don't know, maybe overcoming any type of idea that they might have about a prospective partner, if that makes sense?
For me, and I've said this before, too, is that, you know, when I tell people about our story and when I tell people about the experiment that we took part in, for a lot of people, it's the absolute scariest thing ever to be even thought of in arranged sort of scientific marriage. But, you know, that same scary decision and something that, you know, people would kind of just turn away from turned out to be the best decision of my life. And, you know, just having the wherewithal to know who you are, know what you want, and ultimately it comes down to the fact that you have to want to be married. You have to be ready to settle down, but
you can't, you know, you don't know when love is going to come. You don't know how it's going to come. And all you can do is be prepared and take chances. And the thought of failure was way worse. I mean, was so much easier than the thought of just not knowing and not taking a chance. And, you know, you could always get over these little humps and you could always get over these little challenges that you have. But if you don't have, if you're not in the game, you can't, there's no winning or losing. It's, you know, you're not going to open yourself up to possibly the best decision of your life.
Yeah, and for me, like I said earlier, it's really like, you know, I'll say it like it is. Like I was very scared, really, but it comes off very shallow that when I saw my husband, there was no attraction and no butterflies. And I was like, oh, this is not going to work. And I feel like that is how a lot of us women are, you know, like you see someone like blind date or whatever. There's nothing there right initially. So then you're like, nope, not going to work. But maybe like, don't shut it off so fast. Like open your mind and open your heart to get to know the person inside. Because I can assure you that when you fall in love with someone, I mean, you'll never think they're unattractive. And my husband's clearly not a bad looking dude, but I'm
just, yeah, you have to give ugly people a second chance.
I'd like to say, you know, like even if they have moles on their face, they're still pretty on the inside. Because my husband has moles.
That's very true.
I love it. It's beautiful. All right. Jamie and Doug, thank you guys so much for joining us. And again, for the listeners that want to tune in, I know I'll definitely be tuning in Tuesday night, December 19th at 8, 7 Central on Lifetime. Married at First Sight, Jamie and Doug plus one, their show premieres. You get to see beautiful baby Henley. Obviously, Jamie and Doug, despite Doug's moles on his face as he progresses, I'm sure he's still beautiful on the inside, and that's the important thing. I'm incredibly happy.
And you get to watch Henley coming out of Jamie.
Oh, wow. Okay, I don't know if that's appropriate. Maybe nighttime television. I'm not sure exactly, but either way, I'll be tuning in. I'm excited to watch it. You guys are amazing. It's clear that you guys both love each other. 3.5 years after meeting each other for the first time in the altar. That's impressive. And thank you guys so much for calling in. Again, congratulations on the newborn. And we look forward to, you know, keeping in touch, and maybe we can talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care, guys.
Bye.
There's a good quote in there from him. The fear of failure is not as great as the fear of not knowing.
The fear of failure is not as great as the fear of not knowing. Let me break that down in my head for a second.
Like, think of a girl that you think maybe she could be the one, maybe not.
Oh.
It's better to ask her out and find out than to never know. Or maybe it's not even a relationship thing.
Does that mean the fear of failure is less than the fear of not knowing?
Yeah, I said not as great, and you said less. That's fine.
I thought you said the fear of failure is greater than the fear of not knowing.
No, it's not.
Okay, that's true.
It's not as great. Like me moving to California from Wisconsin. I would have rather come out here and failed than not known what would happen if I had done that.
No, absolutely. I think that there is definitely some takeaway in that. And I think that a lot of people don't necessarily go and take that leap of faith when they, by experiencing it, will have objective reasoning whether they like it or not. And I think actually I was dealing with this lately. I think one of my friends was being reluctant into entering into a relationship while the other one was full-heartedly open to the idea. And she was like, no, I don't know if I want to. Like, what if this? What if that? What if this? And I was like, well, you should just go for it. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But if you don't go for it, then you would always be stuck wondering, what if I went for it? Mm-hmm. And how would it have happened for me?
Right.
So I think that's kind of what he was getting at. And I think it's definitely true. And
whatever it is in life, jump in with both feet.
Right.
Or you'll never know.
Unless it's something bad, like
a life of crime.
Yeah. I'm going to take this bank robbing seriously. I'm not going to half-ass this.
Well, you shouldn't. If you're going to do it, do it. All right. Lindsay emailed us, and it was such an interesting email that we got her on the phone because she has an interesting dilemma that I think maybe you could help with or we could help with. Here's Lindsay.
Love to. Hey, Lindsay.
Hello.
Thank you so much for calling in. How are you?
Hi. Good.
Good. So I understand that you emailed us. We have a compelling story from you, and we want to talk through it with you. Do you mind kind of sharing your side of the story, and we can see what's going on?
Oh, sure. Okay, so I've been in a relationship for 14 years, and it's been really great. Lots of ups and downs, but the biggest thing recently within the last probably 3 or 4 years has been the amount of feedback that I get from people about as far as, like, us not being married. And just, like... really disrespectful comments from friends and family. And it's really been an eye-opening experience for me, like just how much marriage means to people, but also like not only that, it's just like how much a part of this is, it is in our society to the point where it's like you can't get away with not being married as a couple or not having some sort of explanation. You just can't, like, people just cannot accept our relationship for what it is and how much we love each other. It's like we have to prove to everybody that our love is what we say it is.
Right. And so Lindsay, let me ask you this. Are you happy?
I'm so happy. I'm so happy.
And is he happy?
Yes.
So then who cares?
I know. It's just, you know what? If it was like a stranger on the street and the people have like just random people have said things to me and I just always blow it off. But when it's your friends and your family, especially like most recently, the girl that I thought was one of my best friends has said some really hurtful, nasty things. And I've been very respectful and not voicing my opinion too much about how I feel about marriage, because I have a very strong opinion and I respect those who choose to get married. And I mean, I go to every single wedding possible at this point. In the 9 years that we have been living together, we just this past October went to our 20th wedding. Wow. In 9 years. So we're like official, like professional wedding guests at this point. But like, so like, I respect weddings and I love like that my friends, that this is what they want, but it's not what I want. And when they can't respect that, it's such an internal battle. Like
Lindsay, can I ask you, have you been listening to this podcast the past recent episodes?
I've listened to every single episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah. First and foremost, thank you so much for being a listener. We appreciate you and we love you. So I don't know if you listened to I think it was the most recent one or maybe a couple weeks before that, but I have a pretty strong opinion of marriage as well. And I think you're kind of describing my exact thoughts on it, where I think that people put a very unrealistic expectation on marriage. And if it doesn't conform to their idea or like the societal norms of what marriage kind of is now, then they get uncomfortable with it, unhappy with it. And your situation is exactly that. I feel like by people putting this pressure on you and kind of shaming you in a way because you're not married, because you're not appealing to their sense of normalcy or society's sense of normalcy, then it's not good. It's not seen as good. And I just don't, I think that's what's wrong with the marriage culture nowadays. Is it's beautiful for people to get married. And I will always full-heartedly support people getting married. But people are putting an expectation on it to where if you're not getting married, then people are almost like looking down on you in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, my best friend actually has the nerve to, I shouldn't even be using that name anymore, best friend, because you start to realize soon enough, like when people have the nerve to say this stuff to you, that maybe they're not as good of friends as they should be. But anyway, she has the nerve to say to me that my relationship did not mean as much as hers with her husband because we are not married. And I will, of course, we've been drinking a couple glasses of wine at this point, so I was not like in the state to defend myself, which really sucked because I had to just like sit there and take it because I knew that in the state that I was in, I was either going to say something really nasty in return and it would have been bad, or I just was not able to articulate how I felt. You hit the nail on the head with what you just said as far as like how I feel about marriage and how my partner feels about it too. And it's not, again, it's not that I don't respect the decision for other people to do that. I see like weddings as more of a celebration of the relationship. But for me personally, like a ring does not show commitment to me, and a piece of paper does not show commitment to me. His everyday actions and my everyday actions in our relationship, that's commitment. And when my friend tried to tell me that, like, well, it's different when you get married because you have to consider your partner's you have to consider your partner in every single decision that you make. And she's like, you know, financially and otherwise and your life goals and all that stuff.
But I'm sure you're still already doing that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at her like, why did it take a ring right. for you to suddenly decide to make, like, huge life goals decisions with him? Like, I don't get it. And she put so much on that ring and that piece of paper. And I just want to be like, if that ring and that piece of paper and any evidence of your marriage, like, burned up and disappeared, that doesn't make your relationship any different or any less valuable than what it's already at. So why put so much onto such a materialistic thing? Like, I just think it's an unrealistic expectation. But I mean, I don't know. I could go on for ages about how I feel about this.
No, I appreciate the passion. I'm going to hand you over to Mark.
Well,
Marquez.
You two tend to be on the same page, and so I just want to give a little bit of an outside perspective on this.
No, go for it.
Have you always felt this way before you met this guy? Which I know you're very young when you met him.
Yes. So I was never a girl to I never thought about my wedding. I was never like one of those girls that was like, oh, this is what I want my wedding to be about. This is like, it just was never like that. And actually, a couple of years ago, I had this brief slip of like, because all of my best girlfriends and all of our closest friends decided to get married within like a 2-year span, like super close friends. And it was really intense. And we were in a couple of the weddings and it was all everybody talked about and they kept saying, oh, you guys are next. And I at that point, like, didn't have the heart to tell people, no, we're not next. I don't want to get married. But like, then I had, it was like, they started to guilt me into thinking, well, maybe this is what I should do and should be doing because everyone else is doing it. I had this brief moment of like, oh my God, like, is it wrong that we're not getting married? And then I sat down and talked to him and I was like, this is how I feel. And I've never felt this way before. And I realized it was because of all the pressure that everybody else was putting on me.
Sure.
Because it's what they wanted. So, and it's never what I wanted.
Last week, I was listening to Howard Stern and he had Alec Baldwin on. And Alec Baldwin said to Howard, why did you get married a second time? Because he had been with his current wife. He'd been with her for like 7-8 years and they decided to get married. He'd always said he never would get married a second time, but he did. So why?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, because people treat your girlfriend differently than they treat your wife. There is a respect level there that obviously maybe who cares, but he was tired of people treating her as his girlfriend. He wanted her to be family.
Mm-hmm.
In every sense of the word family. And so I think there is something to that. Like, and your friend, when she says that, you know, her four-year relationship is more important than yours, I mean, legally speaking, she is right. I know that, you know, whatever, but she is right from a legal perspective that if, God forbid, somebody is hospitalized, there's certain choices that one can make that you would not be allowed to make for your boyfriend, I don't think. If she were to get a divorce, she's protected in terms of division of assets. I'm not sure you're protected in those situations. So there are legal reasons to do it. There are familial reasons to do it. Are you going to have kids at some point?
No.
Okay.
If
so that does.
If we want to have kids, we said we would adopt. And but even if we did have kids, it's not a reason for us to want to get married.
Sure. And if he asked you tomorrow, what would you say?
No.
You'd say no. Wow.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
I would say no.
So then I think you have two choices. I think choice one is get married, and choice two is decide that nobody else's opinion matters because it doesn't.
Choice three, stay boyfriend, girlfriend, but just start telling people you're wife and husband.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, I said to my friend, I was like, so if like I went, if we went down to like the courthouse tomorrow and went and got married and didn't tell anybody, how is my relationship different? Suddenly it's not. It's a piece of paper. It's legal. And I get that everybody like recognizes things legally as a family, but we've even looked into it and I can legally like do things with him so that him and I have things squared off in a way that like, that we're still legally recognized for different medical stuff. And so for me, it's just like, it's not, I can't bring myself to put all of that into just like an act that everybody else does. And like, I just can't, like, it's just not.
Lindsay, do you plan on spending the rest of your life with him?
Yes. Yes. Unless by some chance something crazy happens. And it's weird because I also don't believe in forever. So we take things day at a time. So as of right now, yes.
So this is where we kind of take different turns in the road of agreement, because I do think that if you do plan on spending the rest of your life with him, I think a marriage is it's a beautiful joining of your relationship, both whatever, publicly, legally, all that kind of stuff, familially, if that's a word. But again, it's your decision. It's your life. If you guys both don't want to get married, then that's your every right to not get married. My thoughts on it is I don't like how everyone out there is kind of expecting a certain thing out of every relationship or every couple.
Sure.
But in my specific experience, if I know that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with someone, and maybe it is just maybe I'm a little bit more prone to giving into societal pressure than you are, but I would be comfortable marrying them if I knew I'm going to spend the rest of my life with them. That's just my take on it. But I understand where you're coming from. It's like, you don't, if you know something is one way, then you don't necessarily need everyone else's approval for it to justify it in your own eyes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and like, it's just, nothing would change as far as our relationship goes if we get married. And I feel like I would just be doing it because everybody else wants me to be doing it. And that's not what I want.
I think as long as you guys are both in love with each other, as long as you both are happy with each other, that's the most important thing. And eventually your friends and your family are just going to have to get used to it. But Lindsay, best of luck. I'd love to circle back with you later on and kind of check in and see how things are going. But thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Calling in, being so open about your relationship. And obviously we wish you the best.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Good luck with everything. And yeah, like I said, I hope we talk soon.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's sneak in some emails here before we wrap it up, shall we?
Let's do it.
Mickey is calling you out.
Mickey.
Dear Dean, as someone who also sucks at dating, I can definitely relate to a lot of your woes, but something struck me recently I thought I should bring up. I've heard you mention a few times now, both on your podcast and on Becca's podcast, that you prefer it when girls pursue you as opposed to you being the pursuer. This is a lie, and you know it.
Oh, Mickey.
Exhibit A. Your profile for The Bachelorette, when asked, do you prefer a woman who wants to be pursued or a woman who pursues you and why? You responded, a woman who demands to be pursued. Nothing good comes easy.
I did say that.
Think about it. If a regular girl pursues you and ends up dating you, imagine how she might feel in the relationship. You constantly get DMs on Instagram from eligible girls. You have a ton of options. That's super intimidating. It'd be normal for a girl to feel insecure about your relationship if she expressed the initial interest. That's an interesting point. I had to read that a few times. She's saying that if a girl pursued you, she would question your feelings for her.
Okay.
Because there's so much competition out there.
Of course.
And you didn't pursue her initially, so maybe she just won you over. Maybe it's not real.
So I'm confused what I'm lying about, because I said that I need to be pursuing the girl.
No, you said on your podcast that you prefer it when girls pursue you.
Oh.
And on The Bachelorette, you said you pursue.
That's a great point. Okay, let me think about this for a second. I think what I maybe meant when I said that I enjoy when a girl pursues me is maybe when a girl expresses interest in me and I still have to be pursuing
them.
Right,
she gives you some sort of green light that tells you pursuing is a good idea.
Yes. And what I've actually learned a lot about myself through this podcast is that I need kind of that constant affection of whether it's physical, whether it's verbal affirmation, whatever it is, acts of service, I need that stuff. So when I say I need a girl to pursue me, I think maybe what I meant was that I need a girl to be open and expressive in her interest towards me, but I need to constantly be the one that's pursuing them in whatever way. So maybe I'm just thinking of it both sides. Maybe I think I need to be pursuing them and they need to be pursuing me.
Yeah.
But I definitely have noticed in relationships that I don't want to say lately, but there was a time where like I struggled to get dates and all that kind of stuff. I think we've all been there. And like you're constantly like lobbying for yourself. You're like, this is why I'm a good choice to be dating, or like this is why I think you should date me. And like you're kind of like pitching yourself or selling yourself to this person. And it's like those are the moments where you're like you're questioning whether you're in this girl's league enough, I guess. Mm-hmm. And like those are the moments where you're like, okay, like I'm worth it. Like she's gonna not regret dating me, like that kind of stuff. And like those are the moments where you're like really understand yourself better and really understand what you want in a relationship, I guess, if that makes any sense.
I think you're like what Tanya calls a girl who drops the handkerchief.
Yeah, she mentioned that before. Can you remind me what that means again?
Well, it's an old, I believe it's a very old reference where women would literally drop their handkerchief back in, I don't know, the 1800s, and a man would come and pick it up and hand it back to them, and that was the beginning of a courting process.
Yeah.
And so she's saying that she likes to just kind of put it out there that if you would like to pursue me, I'd be interested in that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that as I've gotten old, and again, back to even what we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, how my life has changed over the past mm-hmm. year, it's changed so much romantically because I need constant validation in the way that someone feels about me in order to feel comfortable in a relationship. And mm-hmm. I'm not proud of that by any means, because before I think that I was a little bit nonchalant in the relationships and I was like, yeah, like you like me or dislike me, we're still together, whatever it is, and I'm still happy. But now it's like, I need to feel loved. Mm-hmm. And I was actually just talking about this recently. I was like, it's one thing to know that you're loved and it's a different thing to feel that you're loved. Right.
Yeah.
And so in those relationships where I kind of want a woman to pursuing me, I guess what I meant by that is that I need to feel like I am validated and loved in the relationship, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Okay. And then on the other side, like I said, yeah, I think that it's important for a woman to need to be pursued, because I think that on a daily basis, whether it's romantically, in friendships, whatever it is we're all kind of projecting our value or our worth in socially. And I think that it just is, it's a matter of, I don't know, selling yourself and making sure that everyone's time is not wasted. Right?
Yeah. Well, I hope that clears it up for Mickey.
I don't think that clears it up for anyone.
No.
I don't even think that clears it up for me. And I'm still working through it as well. And to Mickey's point, I still don't necessarily know 100% what I want in a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, I know that there are things that I don't want. I know that there are things that I certainly do want, but there is still a big void in exactly what I need.
I think that's common. I think you know it when you find it.
Yes, and that's what people keep saying.
Yeah.
But when do you know it and when you find it? It's like, is it like a snap of the fingers, or is it like...
It is, yeah? Honestly. Speaking of someone who found it, it's like, this is what I've been looking for, and he didn't even realize it before.
But say,
that.
What if it doesn't feel like love right away? What if you find someone that gives you everything you need, but you don't feel like it's love?
Oh, there's something missing.
Yeah.
I don't know. but maybe that's just another step along the way.
Yeah.
Like, this person showed you all these new things you didn't know you wanted in a relationship, and yet she's still not quite the one.
Yeah, I think we can all say that we've been there at some point, really.
This is from Fall. I'm sorry if it's Fal. I'm not sure. It is a female,
it's Fal,
though.
It's
Fal.
Yeah.
Fal. Okay. Dean, I'm 31, I'm single, and I'm celibate, and I'm starting to think I may very well die alone. I decided to become celibate nearly 2 years ago after a dating experience gone horribly awry. I slept with someone too early on in the dating process, and then he only ever called me when he wanted to hook up. We never even went to dinner. After that, I said, screw this, I'm willing to wait on someone who respects me. Celibacy it is. Since then, I've had a horrible time on every dating app. No one wants to take the time to get to know me, and when they see celibate, they run for the hills, or they send me pictures of their junk. On my profile, it says celibate until I find someone worth my time. I'm not even waiting for marriage. I just want to find someone worth my time. My question is, Dean, if you met a girl who you thought was interesting and cute and she said that she was celibate, would you even give her the time of day? Like, is it so much to ask for someone to actually get to know me before I jump into bed with them? One good thing is it's weeded out a lot of douchebags. Help! I don't want to die alone. I'm too awesome for that.
I have a lot of mixed feelings about this one, Fal.
Okay.
I think that she shouldn't let one bad experience dictate her future experiences. She had one guy who she hooked up with, slept with, that didn't take her to dinner or call her afterwards. That shouldn't sully her experience in the entire dating pool moving forward. That being said, there are a lot of guys that will, I don't want to say a lot of guys, there are guys out there that will use and abuse those types of relationships to get what they want out of them. Point number one. Point number two. You have on your dating profile, celibate until I find someone worth my time. And I have an issue with that. I don't think that you should project your celibacy. I think it's perfectly fine for you to be celibate and for you to save yourself until you find someone special. But I don't think that you should be projecting it to the people that you haven't necessarily met yet. I think that you should be open to any relationship. And then you don't have to sleep with them on the first date. You don't have to sleep with them on the 10th date. You don't have to sleep with them on the 30th date. You continue to go on these dates. And if you are able to continue dating a guy who is comfortable with your, I guess, hesitancy to open up physically with him, then that's the person that you should be dating, and you shouldn't be basically putting that connotation on the relationship right away. Like, hey, I'm celibate, date me. It should be like, hey, date me. By the way, I'm not comfortable hooking up with you right away. I'm going to take a little bit of time to like feel this out and then go from there. And if you're comfortable with that, great. And if you're not, then goodbye.
Right. And what you're saying is, and I agree with you, celibacy needs to come off of your dating profile because you are not celibate.
Right.
You're not. Celibate is saving for marriage or maybe
a lifetime.
Yeah. You're not celibate. You simply want to get to know somebody before you sleep with him. That's not celibate. That's smart.
Yes.
That's what everybody really should be doing.
100%.
I mean, look, if you want to have casual sex, great, have fun. But I think the majority of people are not going to sleep with somebody until they get to know them a little bit. So you're not celibate. So by overselling it, you are scaring guys away unnecessarily.
Yes.
And I do have a personal story. When I met my wife, she told me that she wasn't going to sleep with anyone until she gets married. She was not a virgin at the time, but she regretted the fact that she wasn't and wanted to wait. And I didn't run for the hills. I thought to myself, I enjoy this person so much. I just want to spend as much time with her as possible. It's fine. I'm not even going to worry about that element. And it didn't, long story short, that didn't last. We didn't wait until we were married. But I also think it's a good test of a guy to tell him, I'm going to wait till marriage. And if he heads for the hills, maybe that wasn't the guy for you necessarily. Yeah. But that's actually a different situation. You're not saving yourself for marriage. I say, don't even bring it up.
Right. I agree. Easton?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not exactly the same, but like, I don't drink alcohol. I never have. Mm-hmm. And I always felt that there were times where I went on dates with girls and I right up front, I was like, hey, by the way, I don't drink. This is not happening. And like, and that's, I just feel like doing that right up front is more of like a, this is something like, this is a way to push you away mm-hmm. from me. And I'm not saying that like not having sex with someone is like a bad thing or pushing you away. I'm just saying that like, I think putting up an instant like, hey, this is something that you're going to see as a hurdle to get over.
Yeah.
Isn't good because it shouldn't when you get into a relationship, it should just be getting to know someone and seeing if you click that way. And then when you get further down the road, you can bring up those things. I don't know. That's the way I was like,
that's a fantastic point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic point.
All right. This is Victoria. I feel like I need to weigh in on the talking to exes conversation. I've been in a relationship for almost 3 years now, and my boyfriend is still in contact with a lot of his exes. I have no relationship with any of my exes at all. It's been a point of tension for us, especially early on in our relationship, because he couldn't understand why it bothered me. Cheers, and good luck with being less sucky at dating, Victoria in Canada.
Cheers. Well, Victoria, I wish I could give you clear, evident advice on this. Because I am just like your boyfriend, current boyfriend, yes, where I enjoy having the ability to have an open conversation with my exes, purely platonically, but I can understand how if you're currently dating someone that comes across as negative. But as I've been hosting this podcast for the past 3 months, what I've learned is that it's almost better, I would say like 9 times out of 10, to sever all communication with exes. And for all three parties, for the girlfriend, for the boyfriend, and for the ex, because all that you're doing with that situation is kind of like rehashing old emotions, rehashing old feelings, potentially keeping doorways open for later on. And so while it is very, very tempting to keep a relationship with an ex that your boyfriend seems to be doing, and while I would say 6 months ago, say not worried about it or don't let it bother you at all, I think that if it's something that bothers you or a point of contention in your relationship, then I think that you two should have that conversation and have him stop talking to his exes.
I think he needs to respect your wishes. Yeah. I really do. I think if it really bothers you, he needs to respect that. Because what is he getting out of it? Because at some point you have to ask yourself, upside, downside, what's the upside of this, these friendships or whatever it is with my exes? Because I don't think it's much compared to the relationship you're in right now. If you have to choose one or the other, I think you would always choose your current relationship. And every relationship is give and take. There are sacrifices. There are things that you don't love 100% about the other person. But it all, when you look at the whole thing, you're happy and you make each other happy. I think he needs to respect your wishes and cut off communication with the exes.
Yeah. I will say, drawing from personal experience, I was dating someone recently. And we went out, or I'm sorry. So I was dating someone recently and I went out to dinner with my ex-girlfriend. But we went out to dinner under the connotation or under the umbrella as friends and like mm-hmm. just to catch up and like to kind of see where each other's at in our lives because we haven't spoken probably in, you know, 6 or so months. And we sit down and we start talking and it's like we're catching up. And I was in the dating relationship that I was in, things were a little bit rocky. Things weren't necessarily going the way that I wanted them to. I was a little unhappy. And it's nice to kind of have a sounding board from someone that's dated you and is able to draw from personal experience. So I sat down. And I was like, hey, this is the status of my relationship now. Like, what do you think am I doing wrong? So I was like, I was very upfront and vocal and honest about me being in a relationship and me wanting to get a woman's perspective, but not only a woman's perspective, a woman that's dated me in the past because she's the person can speak more clearly and concisely mm-hmm. about that kind of stuff. And then I told the girl that I was dating, I was like, hey, like I went to dinner with my ex-girlfriend last night and she wasn't very happy about it. And I understand exactly why. I don't know. It's tough. It's like,
and she wasn't happy for two reasons. I would imagine. Yeah. One is that you had dinner with your ex-girlfriend, but also that you were talking to your ex-girlfriend about your personal issues with her.
Right, which at the time I didn't see the issue, but I get it. What was the point I was just about to say?
Sorry.
No, you're fine. And so while I looked at it as an experience as to what I can do to improve my current relationship, I can see how it gets kind of skewed in what are your ulterior motives? And in that situation currently, like, I was going through a very emotional time in my life. Not very emotional, but there were some things that I was going through that it's nice to have someone that understands you on a deeper level than either just your friends or like a new relationship, that kind of thing, that can, you know, be there and listen you out and kind of like regurgitate things that are going to be beneficial to your emotional state. And I think that as a girlfriend or someone that you're dating, they're like, well, why aren't you just doing that with me? So it goes both ways. I think to Victoria's point, if you have expressed your dislike for your boyfriend talking to his ex-girlfriends, I think that he should stop talking to his ex-girlfriends. Mm-hmm. And again, six months ago, I would have said otherwise. But I think that now, if that's what you want, I think that's what he should do. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm sure some would disagree and say, hey, you got to have trust and you got to have the friends that you want to have. You should be able to choose your friends without the other person weighing in. I just think if it really bothers her, that's a sacrifice that's an easy one to make.
And if he's still talking to his exes, I'm going to venture to say that he's getting something out of those exes that he's not getting out of you. And so he's like pulling the good things from them while still dating you, because maybe he likes you a lot more than he likes them, but there are still things that he's not getting from you that he knows that he can get from them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but like what? I don't mean physical things.
Not physical things, emotional things, humor, or intellect, or something. Say that a heart has 100%, right? Maybe his current girlfriend he's getting 75% of that.
Yeah.
And then there's like 10% to each ex-girlfriend, whatever it is, because he knows that like they know him in a certain way. Everyone knows each other differently, right? So those exes know him in a certain way that he can confide in them when he needs to, or he can get a certain something out of them that he needs to feel better about himself, whatever it is. I don't know, just a thought.
I see that. At least like cherry picking from like past relationships just to feel fulfilled, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or heck, maybe this guy just needs a lot of attention.
One more. This is Shelby, and I'm going to summarize this one because it's a little long, but basically what she's saying is two questions. First one is, can married people have nights out with their girlfriends or boyfriends? And I say, absolutely. You've got a bunch, I think it's almost imperative that you do. In some relationships I've seen, the woman goes out because she's home with the kids a lot and just needs to get out, where the guys kind of have their work as kind of their social time. They're out in the world, they're seeing people, they're making friends, they're interacting, ha ha ha. And she doesn't get that, so she goes out with her girls. I think it's all fine. I think it's all based in trust. I mean, I think there's boundaries. He shouldn't maybe go to the strip clubs with the guys if you're not comfortable with that. Maybe you shouldn't go see Magic Mike XXL with your girls if he's not comfortable with that. But it's all about what each other are comfortable with and trust.
I think that it's definitely important to have a social life outside of the relationship. Whether you're married, whether you're boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever state you're in, I think that you guys need to have lives independently of each other. And that involves going out to the bars with your friends, whether it's guys or girls, whoever it is. But again, I'm not married, so I don't know.
I am. I think it's fine. Her other question is, when you're out with the girls, dancing, whatever you're doing, how do you let guys know that you're married? Because she thinks that if you say it right away when they walk up, by the way, I'm married, you're being presumptuous that they were interested in you. And they're like, oh, okay, whatever. You're not all that. If you wait until them later, they're like, well, what was I wasting my time for? So she's trying to figure out the happy medium. When do you let them know you're married? I think, doesn't your ring tell that story?
There's an indicator on the left hand usually.
And if you're not wearing your ring for girls' night out, I think there's problems there.
There's only a ring on your finger unless your name is Lindsay and you've been in a 14-year relationship without being married.
Oh, good point.
I think, despite the inability to notice the ring on the left finger, I think you should tell them right away. Personally, if a guy approaches you with clear intentions to be hitting on you, I think the only thing that you can do is be like, oh, sorry, I'm married, but I'll still hang out with
you. Or do you casually drop it in like, oh, that's so funny. I was just talking to my husband about that the other day.
See, that's actually a great way of going about it, too. And
it's less embarrassing for them, I think.
As a guy who at multiple points in his life has accidentally hit on married women, that's kind of deflating in a lot of ways. But it's like a very clear tell sign that, okay, sorry, I should probably stop flirting with you because you obviously have a husband and I want to respect those boundaries. I think the earlier you can make it clear that you're not interested in flirting or casually hooking up with whatever guy, the better. So if a guy comes up to you and says, hey, can I buy you a drink? Yeah, you can buy me a drink, but look at this big ass rock I got on my finger, you know?
That's how. But it's interesting when you go out dancing, because there are going to be guys there, and some, and you might want to dance with some guys. And that's probably okay.
But what kind of dancing are we talking about? Because if my wife went to a club and was dancing with guys, I would not be happy.
That's a good point. When my wife and I were first dating, she would go to these swing dance nights at local clubs with her friend Rachel, and they would dance swing dance with other guys, yeah. And it didn't really bother me.
Swing dance. Well, see, the way that I think of dancing is like backing her ass up and like booty grinding and all that kind of stuff.
I've been the dog in those clubs. Like, I know how it goes down, and like, I don't want her anywhere near those guys.
Oh, and the guys that go to those types of clubs are the guys that are going to hook up with married women.
Oh, yes.
And that. I'm even just getting upset thinking about it. All right. Well, so that'll do it for episode 12 of Help I Suck at Dating. Thank you once again for making 2017 so special. You guys are all amazing. I know sometimes it's been hard to get through this podcast with me, but I like to think that I'm getting a little bit better at it. Much to Mark and Easton credit. They definitely helped me, you know, kind of guide me along throughout this whole process. I think that if you compare episode 1 to episode 11 or 12, which this one is, I think I've noticeably cut down on my ums, which I've been trying to do a lot of. So thank you for sticking out with me. For whoever's out there still listening, I'm not sure if we even have a single listener at this point. I just want to extend a big thank you very, very, very much. You make this possible. Not in a million years would I've ever thought that I would be hosting a podcast, but here I am, and it's all because of you. So that'll do it for 2017 of
Where
Help
will
I Suck at Dating.
Christmas Eve, Christmas morning. What where's Dean?
Yeah, December 23rd, I will be flying out to the island of Oahu with my three siblings. And
Dad's not going.
Mm. No, he's not going. Mm. I'm currently moving. So I'm moving from my house in Venice to my new house in Venice, two blocks away, which is kind of annoying. But a lot going on. Yep, we'll be celebrating Christmas together in my mother's ashes, which I'm incredibly, I don't want to say excited for, but I'm looking forward to, I guess, kind of closing that chapter. I was thinking about it the other day, and I was like, I can't believe we haven't done this. I can't believe that my mother's body is just burnt down to ashes in a box in my room.
It is really rough to wrap your head around.
It's just weird to think about. So I have these, I don't know if I told you guys these. So I bought these 5 urn necklaces, basically a necklace where you can, you know, insert powder, ashes, whatever it is. And I was going to put like a capsule full of my mother's ashes in each urn necklace, one for me, one for my sister, one for my brother, one for my brother, one for my father. And I was going to like attach a note to it and be like, hey, I am so grateful that we're all able to scatter mom's ashes together. But I would know that, you know, you had a personal connection with our mom, and I want you to take these ashes and scatter them where you want, or do with them as you will, keep them, wear them, get them built, converted into cushion to stone, whatever it is. Mm. And then I was thinking about it. I was like, how am I supposed to pull the ashes out of the box and put them into an urn necklace? Because that just feels weird, right? Like, I don't know if there's a proper procedure to go about it. So I need to figure that out. I obviously only have, a few days before we head out there. But
you're bringing the ashes along.
Bringing the ashes along.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing. I'm spending New Year's out there in Hawaii as well. I have a one-way plane ticket. I'm not sure when we're starting to pick up this in 2018. I might be gone for like a month or two. TBD.
Good to know.
I'll let you guys know, I guess, a little bit more on my schedule. But I would like to give one more big thanks to Jamie and Doug as well. They were, they met first. I'm Married at First Sight. But they have a new show coming about with their new secondborn baby, I guess. But with their newborn baby. It's called Jamie and Doug Plus One. It premieres on Tuesday night at 8/7 Central. Tuesday, December 19th on Lifetime at 8/7 Central. And again, thanks to the listeners. We'll be back the very first week of January for more of Help I Suck at Dating. 2017's been a weird year for me, but maybe 2018, I'll suck a little bit less.
Follow Help I Suck at Dating with Dean Unglert on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.